The most prolonged and worrying financial crisis facing schools since the Good Friday Agreement, if not ever. That's a claim from a group of school principals who have contacted the Nolan Show. With me now is Chris Logan, principal of Comber Primary School. Good morning to you, Chris.
Good morning, Vinnie.
You're part of the Strategic Primary School Principals Forum. What is the issue? How bad has it got, in your view, at this point?
Well, it's the group meets together. They're representing different local area groups from all across the country. We've come together to deal with this in a wider sense because we all were working locally independently and realising that the crisis is desperate. It's a financial crisis and becoming an educational one. Schools are going madly into deficit because of the lack of funding, specifically I'm dealing with primary schools here, but I know it's in all schools. Lack of funding in the system, and costs are rising. And when the two things, that you get less money per child and the costs go up, it just is driving schools to the brink of financial ruin, really.
Let's put this into real terms, and I know you can't speak and give us details from every school, but let's talk about your school. When you mention a deficit, how bad is it for you?
Well, it's a six-figure deficit at our school. Our parents are aware of that. You're talking a year-on-year increase in costs, and we're looking at maybe £50,000 or £60,000 extra in deficit a year. We are an increasing enrollment school. We're getting bigger every year.
And can you put an exact number on that deficit for you, just a bit more accurate?
Well, £116,000 at the end of last financial year, rising if the costs and things stay the same up to £230,000 and beyond that. And we're not on our own with that. We're like that in other schools, and that's with an increasing enrollment. And we have the Board of Governors here have been managing the situation and have been making cuts. I've had to reduce staffing in school to try and get that. But you get the point, Vinnie, where you just can't cut anymore because you need to have a teacher standing in front of a class. There's nowhere else for the children to go other than go to sort of Victorian levels of class sizes of 40 and more.
And is that a real possibility?
Well, no school would want to do that. It's just simply an impossibility. You can't get to that situation. You're not allowed to, apart from anything else, in terms of class size numbers, and it just really isn't anything that a principal would do. But you're in this catch-22 situation, and our school and other schools like it, and a lot of schools around the country are facing exactly the same conundrum. You've got the stage where you've done all you can do, you've pared back, you've managed the situation locally, you've done it on your own without any support, your Board of Governors have done it, you've tried your very best to manage the situation to make sure that you're giving your children everything you can, and then you reach a situation you can't do any more.
So what does that mean day to day? I know you've mentioned the possibility of increasing class sizes, but what else does this mean? Where else are you cutting back?
Well, it impacts probably first of all, on special needs children across things. That's the information I'm getting, not just from my school, but across the schools. I mean, we're talking schools as far apart as Derry, Shankill, Coleraine, Fermanagh, Strabane.
What do you mean by cutting back when it comes to special needs?
The only thing you can do to deal with the debt, really, is look at your staffing costs, because the staffing costs are 90% plus of most schools' budget. So you then have to look at if you are being asked to live within your means, which the education authority, the guidelines you're living with, you have to try and cut staff. And you have to keep teachers in the classrooms. So if you've got teachers who are outside the classroom looking withdrawal groups for children who need literacy support or numeracy support, or a special needs coordinator who helps those children or does that teaching outside the classroom, that's the areas that schools, we are being told and we are being seen and are having to look at, because you need to have a teacher standing in front of children.
So what you're telling me, though, Chris, is, you know, we talk about looking after the most vulnerable in society. You know, our children, you know, surely are near the top of that list.
Absolutely.
And then within that list, you're telling me that children that maybe need extra help, extra support, they're the ones that are suffering.
Yes.
The most vulnerable of the vulnerable are the ones suffering.
Yes, they are. And schools are really doing everything they can not to have this happen. I mean, it is the last thing that schools want to do, but their hands are being forced because they're asked to live within their means. And like I say, those are the groups you have to do. So you're having to do extra things. And those children, if they're not being taken out for maybe extra support, are being dealt with in the classroom. And that has an effect not only on those children, as you say, the most vulnerable, but then has an effect on all the other children. And it has a ripple-on effect on the teachers, because they have to deal with these children who need this extra support in classroom.
Yeah.
And it just
an impact then on those kids on the front line, and then also their parents, families. Like, this does ripple out then beyond what happens in school.
It's an invisible crisis, because the schools have been working really, really hard to stop the effects of this rippling out. Some schools have resisted making the cuts that they should be making to live within their means, because they don't want to let these children down. And that's the major focus. You know, we're hearing it. We've got so far, and we're not going anymore. We can't go anymore, because we simply want to be able to keep the same level. And those vulnerable children need to be catered for. We need to do it. That's our job.
And when you say they're resisting those cuts, do you mean they're resisting by purposely overspending on the budget they have?
It's not,
I don't mean to say that in a malicious way, but they're doing
there are 817 primary schools, Vinny, and the problem really is that each individual school has its own individual story to tell, and it's slightly different in each different one. But the overall trend is, yes, you get to a certain stage, and what's where we're hearing, you get to a certain stage and you just say, we can't do any more. I mean, there's a situation where, you know, you have an increased enrollment or a nearly full school. Mm-hmm. You have maybe a composite class or a couple of composite classes in the school. You have the bare minimum or no SEN support. You've got literally nothing. You've got the bare minimum you need to run the school in terms of staffing, and your deficit is still going up. There's nothing more you can do.
The phone lines are open this morning, 03030 80 55 55. These are your pupils, your children, maybe your siblings that we are talking about, your younger brothers and sisters that are going to be affected by this. So what do you think? How do you feel about this? And who do you point the finger of blame at? 03030 80 55 55. Chris, what is it that you're asking the government? There's two things in particular.
Yeah, well, at short term, the schools need to be protected and funded to ensure that this doesn't impact on children. That's what schools are begging for, to make sure that, you know, they have the funds, they can keep the staffing levels there so that not one child can be affected. I mean, children only get one chance in primary school. It's not a project that could be shelved and brought back again when the times are good. You get one go at it, so they need to have something now to protect them. Longer term, the school system is broken. It is broken. And that's what we're hearing from everybody, and post-primary and primary as well. The funding formula is wrong. It is skewed against primary schools. And the whole system, and maybe speaking personally, if I can speak personally, the system is itself, the way we're segregated, the way we're set up, the sectoral system, isn't working. And it needs a fundamental transformation. It's something that the Education Authority have been calling for. Gavin Boyd, who I know has been unwell, and I wish him well coming back to work, has been calling for that. A transformation of the system. It needs to be fundamentally transformed, and we need a government to do it, because it needs ministerial direction.
You know, that's a lot to ask for, though, given the current situation we're in, Chris.
But, you know, if we don't ask for it, if we just sit on our hands and say nothing, then, you know, when something happens at Stormont again, we need to be putting pressure. We need to be giving them the bigger picture here and saying, look, this is happening now, and get over your difficulties. Go and sit there and sort something out. We want you to do it, and there is a vital reason for you to do it. Apart from anything else, is the most vulnerable are being affected. You need to realise that. And local groups have been lobbying MLAs and in speaking to their local representatives, and they're very sympathetic and they understand. But, you know, longer term, and I'm not talking a short term fix here, but longer term, the whole system needs to be dealt with properly.
Will this have a knock-on impact on things like grades? I know we're talking primary school here, but the ability to learn, the ability to gain certain skills and then move on to high school. And we've heard about issues within secondary school, high school budgets as well.
Yes, well, that's true. And that is our major concern, is that you can't ask the standards, which are you know, very high at primary school level, and, you know, they go on and continue to be high at GCSE, but you can't expect the same level of attainment.
So you're saying, yes, children are not going to learn as much as a result. Is that what you're saying?
Well, it's one consequence of it. That could be an outcome if schools are being forced to make the cuts to their staff they have. You know, you're going to get bigger class sizes. You're going to have special needs children not being given the early intervention that they require.
Yeah.
You're not going to have the funding at the early needs, early years, which needs to be. And I mean, we don't know. But, you know, you can only put two and two together and say, well, if you can't provide that what we want to provide at this level. Okay. Well, what is the outcome going to be?
Chris, stay there if you can, please. Let's talk to the SDLP MLA, Colin McGrath. Good morning to you, Colin. You've heard what Chris has said there. The situation sounds dire. And to an extent, the finger has been pointed at our politicians.
Yeah, there's certainly a very bleak position being presented this morning. And, of course, that is something that I've heard many times whenever I went out and visited schools and spoke to principals and spoke to parents. And I mean, that there has been years of underinvestment from the Tory party in terms of the actual budget that we have in the centre. But like, let's face it, while we don't have an executive and we don't have an assembly, then we're not going to be able to respond to the needs of the education sector, and they're getting worse day by day. And the budgets that are being presented to schools, the amount of money that is committed in that must be spent on things like salaries and wages and heating and electric, that leaves a very, very small amount of money left over. And it's that money that's left over that is used for the bespoke needs in communities. So where you have a particular need in an area that's maybe to do with MADS, and then they can use that funding to be able to lever in some additional support. But that type of funding is just reducing and reducing. Now, I've had many meetings with the Permanent Secretary in the Department of Education, and he is literally banging his head against a brick wall, because while he doesn't get any additional funding, whilst there isn't the ministerial sign-off to be able to change the direction of some of the funding that he has, he is simply only able to provide the same amount of money year on year, but yet the pressures are increasing. That is not a situation that is sustainable, and that is why we need to have an executive. That's why two parties that are very poor.
Yeah, and I know what you're going to say. You're going to say DUP, SDLP, Sinn Féin. We did bid for the DUP and Sinn Féin. They have said, Sinn Féin has said there is no one available. They've sent us a statement, which I'll read out for you in a moment, and we're still waiting to hear back from the DUP. But Colin, there will be people saying, look, this is predictable, Colin. The SDLP, you're going to start blaming the other two parties. They will say they are standing by what they believe in, Sinn Féin, etc., the rights they feel they are fighting for. And therefore, just to point the finger doesn't actually help with this issue or the ability to move on. The DUP say they're willing to go into the executive tomorrow if Sinn Féin are. And therefore, we go in this merry-go-round, and as you heard Chris say there, special needs children are being directly impacted with their education.
The point, though, funny, if you had have just let me finish what I was going to say, I was going to say the two parties have proved that they're incapable of sorting it out. What we need to do now is get all five parties around the table so that we can bring those solutions. We're saying that we're prepared and ready to go in and do that, because on issues such as our children's education, it's too precious. We cannot be messing that up. If we're failing our children, then we're failing as a society. So we need to...
Is that going to work, Colin?
Well, we're not going to know if it isn't going to work unless we try it. We haven't had the opportunity. What I'm saying is that we're ready and willing to get in there to try and do what we can to provide that. And I think that all parties working together is what's going to bring about solutions. And I think that's what people want. Yeah. So let's get the space and the opportunity for us all to step up the mark. Then we can all take the blame equally if it fails.
And I don't mean to sound cynical, Colin, but you know there will be people that will be very cynical, and they'll hear you say that, and people will claim, look, our politicians cannot come together. They haven't for many months now. Therefore, to look at that as a solution to this is pointless.
Well, I understand the cynicism. It's very difficult being in the situation as a politician myself, and I can feel cynical at times myself. But if we don't thrive, and if we don't think of those children sitting in those classrooms, sitting at those desks, eager to learn, willing to learn, wanting to learn, and we aren't doing anything about it, then we are doing the wrong thing.
Chris Little, the Alliance Party MLA, is with us as well. Good morning to you. We've also asked for the Ulster Unionist Party as well, a representative from them, and we're just waiting to see if they are able to. Chris, your thoughts on what you've heard this morning? It doesn't make comfortable listening.
It's outrageous that we don't have an executive in place to respond to the issue, but I realise your frustration at hearing that. The Assembly Education Committee, I believe, met with Chris Logan and his area learning community many, many months ago now. One of my last actions as the Assembly Education Committee acting chairperson was to call the Education Minister to our meeting in January 26, and I think at the time he spoke of the need for over £200 million additional funding per year for education to balance. The Education Authority Chief Executive has warned that in the absence of radical reform and radical investment, our education system will be unaffordable, socially immobile and not fit for the 21st century. That is the scale of the crisis that our schools face. And I have to agree with Colin, and it is the reality. You know, whilst Sinn Féin tweet about constructive meetings about economy strategies and DUP tweet about meetings with the Prime Minister on good governance, this is now well beyond absurd. We need to get in here and deal with it. When Alliance held the Ministry for Employment and Learning, we commissioned an international review of teacher training in Northern Ireland, and that found that our system was too fragmented, that it recommended a single institution for teacher training, the cost savings of which would then be reinvested in our schools and the education of our children. So there are constructive changes that can be made. We need a root and branch review of our education system, and we need political parties who want to be in government taking those difficult decisions to get the support they need to do that.
The point, Chris, is what day is it today? Wednesday. So that is not going to help people that are in school this morning. And I keep going back to children with special needs, as Chris said, who seem to be first to be impacted. The cuts are affecting them first, the people that really we should be putting at the back of the line when it comes to reducing services they can access.
Absolutely. I'm chair of the All-Party Assembly.
So what do we do today?
And we've worked on special education issues on a, really, on a regular basis. The scale of this problem will not be fixed today. It needs urgent reform. It needs additional investment from the UK government, and we saw a modest amount of investment via the Confidence and Supply Agreement, but it was nowhere near enough. £200 million the Education Minister spoke about. Education Authority has talked about £100 million. And that's in a context where our teachers are still owed unawarded pay rises as well. So political parties need to find compromise on issues that are routinely dealt with in other jurisdictions in order that we can get in and prioritise the issues that are priorities for families in our community in Northern Ireland.
Chris Logan, we did get a statement from the Education Authority. They say that the EA is continuing to work with all schools on their 2018/19 financial plans, and good progress is being made. Is that accurate in your view?
So I spoke about our plan. We submitted our plan in June, and the date was in June. I have heard nothing back yet. The latest I hear from the Education Authority is that they're still looking at them, and there's no dates yet for when they're going to come back.
I'm just intrigued as to what this good progress is that they're referring to.
No, I'm not really here to argue against the EA. They have been saying for a long time what I've been saying, that we've been saying, that there needs to be a funding for this crisis and there needs to be a transformation. I mean, they are stuck, to be fair to them, they're stuck between a rock and a hard place. There's no ministerial direction, therefore the civil service can't really move. They can only follow the guidelines they have. This passes down to the Education Authority, who are required to do what they are required to do. And the only decisions in all education are being made by primary schools and primary school principals and governors. We are having, on the ground level, to make the decisions about funding and what we're going to do with it and budgets at our level, because there's no decisions been made at any level in a higher grade. And it's a waiting game,
okay. And
nobody knows the answers. We don't know the answers.
Let's bring in the first caller of the day, Wesley in Comber. Good morning to you, Wesley.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
I'm trying to leave out politicians just for a minute and think outside the box. In all the greater countries around the world, America, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, you look at any of their big universities, their big schools, they're corporate funded. We have corporate companies in Ireland, in Northern Ireland, right across Britain.
So what do you mean, Wesley? You mean like sponsorship for schools?
Exactly. Short sponsoring engineering. The IFA sponsoring sport. You know, there is lots and lots and lots of big companies trying to avoid big tax bills. Well, this is the answer. Avoid your tax bill. Give it to the schools. Sponsor the schools. Put the money back in so as you're getting back out at the other end.
So do you think, you know, and I get what you're trying to say, Wesley, in terms of this is, you know, a suggestion of trying to fix this, but is that realistic? You know, is that something that you think would actually work here? You start bringing in outside sources that are financial, they're businesses.
Yep.
And then intertwining that with the education of your children.
Yes.
You know, are there any concerns
there? Queen's University do it? How many people go to Queen's every year? Do Queen's University do it? Do Jordanstown do it? Every big university in the world does this. That's how they generate their funding. If we don't do it for our young children, if we don't do it for our disabled, those who need it most, guess what? It's on us. It's on us if we don't think outside the box. Our politicians are thinking it's all about them. If they put their heads together and come up with a good game plan to involve everyone, big business, Shorts, you know, Harland & Wolff, all these big companies that we still have in Northern Ireland can be gaining from the education of our children.
Chris Logan, you're still with us. Just to give you some from this statement from the Sinn Féin education spokesperson, Karen Mullen, it says the funding pressures on the education budget are as a direct result of the Tory government's austerity agenda, now supported by the DUP, which has cut the block grant and frontline services year on year. Your thoughts on that?
Well, that's a party political statement. We're not a political group. We're not a union. We're advocating for what it is now. I'm telling you, because I'm hearing it from every single principal of every group that I've ever spoken to, that the system is broken. The system we have is part of the problem, and that's the long-term strategy. Yes, we need more funding, and wherever it comes from, the politicians can argue till the cows come home, but we need it. But I'm telling you now that the professionals agree that our system, the funding formula we have, is ridiculous. The system we run, the sectoral system we run, needs looked at. It needs looked at now. The whole way the education system is set up is causing, in part, this difficulty. And there is an underfunding. So the two things going together are just so bad for the school system. And that's what politicians need to get to do. But I respect the fact that politicians have a difficult job to do, because when you start talking about that, it's the poison chalice, really, of you may be looking at school amalgamations and other things like that, and that has a really strong political effect.
So you mean school closures? So schools and bringing them together?
Well, that's if you listen to what the EA are saying, that's already happening. I'm talking about we need to have a vision for the plan, for the future of this education system, to bring it up to 21st century. And you need to incorporate all those conversations realistically and in an adult fashion, and it has to be done at a political level, because there needs to be political will behind whatever decisions are made. And I'm not talking about pointing fingers and close this and close that. I'm saying we need a vision and a plan that needs to include all these aspects. We can't just have this cobbled together system just rickety running along. We need to be looking at it. We can't do that at our level. We need other people to do that for us.
Okay.
We want to be involved in telling people what needs to be done.
Okay, Brian in West Belfast. Good morning to you, Brian.
I mean, you asked the question, how do you fix this? And it's so obvious. Direct rule. Full-blown direct rule. No more talking. I mean,
and how do you think that would fix the lack of money?
Well, I mean, I'm not really educated enough to know that, but what I'm saying is ministers will be here to stand off things and get things moving. Maybe not as quick as if there was an assembly here, but at least things will be moving. I mean, these people are not going to go back to this assembly here. Forget about it. I mean, things have to be done now. I mean, should I lay an odds in the bookies for will they be back in 5 years? I wouldn't say I'd put my mortgage on, but these people are not going back. I listened to two programmes on the TV, UTV and BBC, two debates this week, and it was just a load of that. They didn't even mention hospitals, the health, the education.
Let's not forget, Brian, who voted for these people.
I know if it was...
Can I ask who you voted for?
I voted for
Sinn Féin. You don't have to tell me. Okay, so you voted for Sinn Féin.
And I always did, because
so you're now...
The end of violence, and that's why I voted for to give them a chance in politics.
But you're now blaming the one of the main parties in Northern Ireland and the party that you voted for.
Yes.
So what's your message to them?
My message is, it's hard to give a message because there's a stumbling block here, and nobody's going to move. And I'm saying at the same time, they're not going to move, and the DUP is not going to move. And that's why I say it's going to... I can't see them going back to this. I hate saying this. I don't see them going back, and I don't like to say direct rule either. But
because it's quite a big jump from to go from voting for Sinn Féin to then calling for direct rule and wanting it tomorrow. And of course, Sinn Féin, you know, they'll say that they are standing up for the likes of marriage equality, the Irish Language Act, and that people voted for them because they would take a stance on that. So their absence from the Assembly is because they're standing up for what the people who voted for them want them to do. So are you saying that they're wrong?
What I'm saying is that the necessary things of life are not, we get worse here, the hospitals, the education, the whole structure of departments are going to close down in the future. Is that good for the people on both sides? I mean, I understand. I mean, I love to have it long, but I understand. I have two grandchildren go to Irish school, and I hate what the DUP are doing. I mean, about that. But I know what I'm saying is the hospitals, the roads, the education. These are serious things that need to happen here.
Okay, Brian. Thank you. Chris Logan, does this mean that parents are going to be asked to contribute? Now, we've been contacted in the past by some parents who have said this has already started to happen. So it's extra funding, extra money and checks from parents to pay for even things like classroom supplies.
Yes, that already happens, Billy. It happens a lot. Not universally, but I know in our school we ask for a voluntary donation from parents who can afford to.
Of how much?
£15 per child, to a maximum of £30
per family. For a year?
For a year. And that's voluntary. We ask for it. We explain what it's used for. It goes into our school fund. And like you say, it's gets used for the basics. It's not being used for any fancy stuff. It's used to for extra resources for classrooms because we don't have the capacity on top of our staffing budget to pay for things like that. And we are similar to the vast majority of schools.
Will that increase? Will you be more pressure?
I mean, people are under pressure at home already. This is a state-funded system. You know, we're not, you know, parents pay their taxes already. That's what the taxes they go for, is to be allocated for education. We are, in essence, adding to that. I mean, that it's not really fair. And in some areas, it may be more affluent parents could maybe afford more, and in other areas, parents just simply can't afford that. And we recognise that as schools, and each school has its own individual thing on it. But it is happening, and it is very widespread.
Stephen and Derry, good morning to you, Stephen.
Morning, Vinny.
Go ahead.
Vinny, you know, it's galling me, Vinny, to listen to your programme this morning again, when you've said that you can't get a representative from Sinn Féin or DUP onto your programme. But let me tell you, it's funny, if there was a problem with a play park in Uri or flags in Belfast, they'd be falling over themselves to get on your radio station this morning. And it calls me that children, one of my own child, who spent 4 years at university, putting himself through a degree to be a primary school teacher, is 4 years later down the line, no job, no prospects, and no future in this country. And I hold them politicians to account on that.
Well, who did you vote for, Stephen? You don't have to tell me. But I'm just asking.
I'm a floating voter. I've voted for the SDLP in the past, and I've voted for Sinn Féin in the past on various issues. But on this particular issue of children's future, I think it's damning on the politicians that are up at Stormont that the musical geniuses, the sporting excellence that's out there within children won't be expressed because there won't be the money to spend on after-school activities that's going to bring the best out of the children.
It's not even that, Stephen. It's not even... And they are important elements of school and of growing up, but you hear what Chris Logan said, and I'll go back to it again, children with special needs. And these are young people, the most vulnerable of our society, you could say, and they're the ones that are being told, you know, these extra supports that are there to help you along and help you develop as a child, we're going to take them away because we don't have the money. There's no option there. Stephen, thank you. John in North Belfast. John, go ahead.
Oh, Vinny.
Go ahead, John.
Our politicians now will play the blame game. They should all hang their heads in shame. We are citizens of the United Kingdom, and this country is being treated second class.
Well, who do you hold responsible, John?
I hold our politicians responsible, and it's about time the Alliance Party, the SDLP, and the official unionists demand it directly.
Well, Chris Little, you hear what John's saying there. You know, is that something that's going to happen?
Well,
I agree with the sentiments of many of the callers. We needed executive authority decision-making. I have evidenced what the Alliance Party did when it was in executive. We conducted a whole-scale review of teacher training and brought forward recommendations that would structure the system better, that would create savings that could go into frontline education. So our priority is taking the difficult decisions that are needed to improve education. People need to start voting for parties that prioritise the things they care about if we're going to see change.
Okay, Chris Little, thank you very much. Last word on this to you this morning, Chris Logan.
Well, I mean, Vinny, I just appreciate the time to speak to you this morning and to get this out. I mean, the group is an advocate. We are the Strategic Primary Principals Group is just an advocate group for all those children in all the different schools.
I understand that. What about you, though, Chris? How long have you been a teacher?
Since 16, 17 years now.
On a personal level, you know, how do you feel about this? Because I'm not a teacher myself, obviously, but I assume you go into that industry because you want to try and make a difference. It's not something that you go into for the money, for example.
No, you don't. I mean, that's it. You go in because it's a calling. That's what people say. I mean, there are so many dedicated professionals at all levels of teaching, and it doesn't matter what primary or post-primary or nursery, it doesn't really matter. They're all there to do the good job they want to do for the children because they get so much out of it. And the morale in schools is hitting rock bottom. It's really impacting on principals, on teachers because of this, because it just can't help but do that. When things, you think things are cutting back, when staffing levels are being impacted and things like that, that just has an effect on people's morale. And teachers and principals are working so very, very hard to not let the effects of this crisis impact on children. And we're getting to the point where we don't know we can do that anymore, and that's worrying us. And that's why we're coming forward today to say something's got to be done. We can't protect all the things we need to do, and schools feel very isolated and very alone. And that's part of the reason why the group has been there, to sort of advocate for schools across the country, little or large, from rural or urban schools, across the sectors. We represent everybody. We're just saying, we need the politicians to play the game here and start coming up to the mark.
Okay.
Because if they don't, then they're not just letting themselves down. I mean, they're letting the most vulnerable down.
Okay, I'm sure we'll talk about this again. Chris Logan, thank you very much. Thanks to Colin McGrath and Chris Little as well.